Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 52, chapter 20, Pure Devotional Service Surpasses Knowledge and Detachment. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Okay, let's start with here. Sri Krishna continued, therefore, for a devotee engaged in my loving service, with mind fixed on me, the cultivation of knowledge and renunciation is generally not the means of achieving the highest perfection within this world. Right? Means that may go along with their service, but it's not that they're cultivating that. You know what I'm saying? The six Goswamis were not cultivating being very austere and knowledge, but they were the greatest scholars and the most renounced. But they were cultivating bhakti. It just happened to be for their service. They didn't require anything, therefore it was very austere. Does that make sense? Behold, for the jnani, he has to cultivate knowledge. He has to cultivate detachment. Right? Because when you're absorbed in Krishna, everything's for Krishna. You're detached. Right? Everything's about Krishna. That means you're in knowledge. But for the jnani, he doesn't have these two advantages. You know, it means, or one advantage of dealing with Krishna. Therefore, he has to cultivate knowledge and detachment separately. Right? And it means he had to have been doing karma before. Being very pious and through karma elevated himself where he now is able to function in jnana. But you can't just jump there. It means we can go from our position up to bhakti, no problem. But you can't go to the platform of jnana, actually, unless you've gone through karma. Right? It means within the community of, you know, within whatever community, you can always point out who's intellectual, who's administrative, who, like this. It doesn't matter, even in a tribe, you know, a simple living out in the jungle tribe, they'll still have these divisions. Right? So you can make that, but in actuality, what we're talking here, then without having gone through karma on the platform of Manamoy, you're not going to get to the platform of Vijnanamoy.
Yes.
Because, yes. You know, and then from there, then we're hoping they get to bhakti. Yes. That's what we're trying. But for the devotees, we just go from our position straight to bhakti. Yes. We don't have to worry. So there's all this other qualification. People are worried, whether I'm this or that. What does it matter? Right? If you're a Mlecha and Yavana, being a Shudra is a step up. We have to always remember that.
Yes.
Like that. So therefore, because of bhakti, that's why we can function at these higher levels. That's why the lifestyle Prabhupada gave us, which basically means the Paramahamsa lifestyle with a touch of Varnashram added in just to create the social structure. We can do if we focus on Krishna. But if we're going to be attached to our background, then the problem is that background isn't that great. You know what I'm saying? So that's why we're giving it up. That identification doesn't mean you don't work with what's there and at the speed, like Krishna said, of the horse, at the speed that it'll respond. But you know what you're working with and you're trying to work with it. Yes? No?
I think we can learn the mistakes from Christians because their acharya gave them the adhikar to come to the next level. And we given the same by Srila Prabhupada.
Right.
But we should, you know, be careful with that point.
Yeah, you shouldn't get distracted because it's, you know, how you say they're situated where they are. And then following it in their tradition, it worked very nicely.
Yeah.
But then when you shifted it, you know, how you say, geographically as the center, then you take on a religion that's different than you're taking. In other words, the philosophy of Jesus is accepted, but the religion of Jesus was not. So then the problem is then they have to create their own religion, because the conditioned soul can't function without religion. So they'll create their own. So even though they say they're Christian, they're Christian by philosophy, but by religion they're not. Actually, they're Roman. You know? And that means it has to be a secular Roman, because Roman already has its own religion. So then it's this funny position where it's secular, but it's actually based on pagan. But your philosophy is monotheism, so it gets a little contradictory. Does that make sense? For Jesus, the religion and the philosophy were one thing. He was just trying to bring out the devotional aspect, because otherwise they were so absorbed in karma and gyan. Like that, you know. They were the ritualistic kind of Brahmins, no? But at the same time, they were the scholars.
Yeah, they had two groups, basically.
So one was scholarly and one was more the rituals.
Yeah.
Okay, so both of them somehow or another didn't appreciate. Because when you bring in bhakti, it lowers their position and brings everyone else up.
He just basically threatened their position.
Yeah, so it's the same as, you know, that's always what happens, like the senators with Caesar. Their position is, if it's a matter of good work and focus and all that, which was more, you know, technically it was Roman, that if, say, someone is a very good warrior, they could come up in the ranks. Right? But then the problem is because there were so many those, and the senators, it was just generational. Who knows how many hundreds of years. They weren't necessarily so good at that. They were just good at the social and political. So then others would come up and get power. You know? Though Caesar wasn't, but others would be. And so then, you know, their position gets, you know, compromised. Because it's technically, if you're not up to the standard, you could lose your position as a senator. You know? Yeah. So it's always going to be that. You see in all these things, it's always some mundane concept. While the spiritual, that's why when Prabhupada says the spiritual is the solution to all those. If you do that, then everything you do nicely. In other words, what's good for administration, you'll do. What's not, you won't. But while in this case is that it'll be said as for administration, but it's not. They're worried he has too much power. But the point is they want that power. Right? Because according to their laws, you can take them out of the position also. Right? You mean your emperor, you have absolute power for 6 months. Then after 6 months, they vote again. So if you're accepting a democratic system, then you have to accept that that's how it works. Right? Yeah, so like that. They wanted to get rid of that, and then they got, what's his name? Augustus, who was what they were afraid of, and he also got rid of them. So that's the part in the material platform, you can't make it work right. So what Krishna is giving is, therefore, it's not you stick to what you're doing. The devotional will make everything else work perfectly. Because otherwise, if it's on the mundane, the amount of rules and regulations we don't have the qualification for. Right? Does that make sense? And then So therefore, it's only through bhakti. So that always has to be seen first. The bhakti, that pure bhakti, has to be maintained. Then you see, okay, what's my conditioning? How to apply it? How to, you know, see, you know, so the horse is going off in this direction. So, you know, how to connect that to Krishna and bring the horse back around to the proper. Is that? Yeah. Okay. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, since the ahankar is destroyed by bhakti alone, which does not give regard to other causes, jnana and vairagya are not recommended for my devotee. Right? Because ahankar means you're in ignorance, and because of that false identity and that lack of knowledge, then you make these mistakes. Yeah, it's funny like that, right? 10 minutes ago it was hot, right? Take the gloves off, now it gets cold. Yeah. So They're not recommended because they're not what's going to make things work. Does that make sense? Either for nourishing bhakti or for destroying ahankar. Right? Because jnana and vairag, when you develop them, what happens? You get proud about it. But if it's in connection to Krishna, then what's to get proud about? It's just, it's for Krishna. So you're not proud of your renunciation. It's for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah? So that, you know, going back to that question that I think was asked some weeks ago about why doesn't Krishna give more facility? So if we're going to get, you know, for jnana and vairagya, we're going to get proud. What about for opulences? So since it's about bhakti, then Krishna will give how much will keep you on the path of bhakti?
Yes.
You want more? Get more devotional. But if you're being more devotional to get more, then it also won't work. Right?
So Maharaj, resting outside bhakti is giving a problem.
It's all giving problem. That's one of the meditations, that everything outside of pure devotion gives problem. Because pure devotion is the mentality, it's not the form, because the form is Vedic. Right? So the mentality, when it's bhakti, there is no attachment. If there's no attachment, then there's no mode of passion. If there's no mode of passion, there's no misery. Right? Doing what you should do, that creates happiness. Right? So what Krishna is talking about, devotion, that's beyond happiness. That's ananda. Right? So that happiness is from self-satisfaction. We take it generally happiness is connected to the mode of passion.
Yes.
Right? When we gain something we want. No, but the Vedic is when you do something you're supposed to do. That then creates happiness. Right?
Yes.
Okay. So, since the ahankar is destroyed by bhakti alone, which does not give regard to other causes, jnana and vairagya are not recommended for my devotees, either for nourishing bhakti or for destroying ahankar, since they do not exhibit any benefit for the devotee. Right? Because it's a very common thing. As devotees, you expect to be humble. That's the, you know, those who are advanced are humble. But those in the path of jnana, many are not. It's very common they're not. But those who then have gone higher and understood devotion, now then they're, you know, because then they have so much, they can see it even more. But it's only because they're devotees. For a person whose mind is fixed in me, madatmanaha, jnana, which differentiates self from body, and vairagya, which renounces enjoyment, are not beneficial since they belong to sattva gun, whereas bhakti is beyond the gunas. It is a fault to bring in jnana and vairag when bhakti is present. Footnote 17. Vriti, what to speak of bringing in karma and adharma, right? So we're talking about manamoy and vijnanamoy that don't have any real standing for devotional service, let alone anamoy and pranamoy. You know, they just don't count, right? Right, because it's not about that we're different from the body, it's that we're the soul servant of Krishna. You understand? If that means you are different from the body, but that's not where the focus is, and we're not the body, it's on I'm servant of Krishna. Right? The only reason to bring it up is because of ignorance. We think I am the body, because of that I want to enjoy. So no, we're not the body, we're the soul. But being the soul, we're servant of Krishna. Right, it goes together. There's not stages of it. It's not when you join first, you're not the body, and then after 6 months, then they tell you, well, hey, you know, you're serving the Krishna and like that, and, you know, secret handshake, you know, all that kind of stuff. Right? No, it's not there. It's that you know you're not the body. We're serving the Krishna. So, just as attachment and hatred for are functions of avidya. Jnana and vairagya are functions of vidya. Though jnana and vairag naturally exist in bhakti, like we said before, being bhakti being the complete, it already includes what's there. Right? Ahankara is destroyed by bhakti alone. This will be explained in the 25th chapter. Right? So, jnana and vairag won't get rid of false ego. It may bring it to a higher level. You might have false ego and goodness now instead of passion and ignorance, but it still will remain. So it's only in devotion, because you re-identify as servant of Krishna. Now you're dealing on Shuddha Sattva. So that means it destroys false ego. Because Shuddha Sattva is the actual position. Right? No? Moreover, jnana in the form of realization of the Lord, and vairagya in the form of distaste for material enjoyment, which are beyond the gunas, since they arise from bhakti, will naturally appear. Right? So it has its natural form. You realize the Lord and you have a distaste for material, therefore it's already in the bhakti process. That's why we don't have to deal with it separately. Right? So because the jnanis deal with it separately and so technically, then we much of the time think that there's something special there. But for us, it just comes anyway. We don't take it as seriously. It's automatic, yes. It is said, devotion, direct experience of the Supreme Lord, and detachment from other things, these three occur simultaneously for one who is taking shelter of Krishna, in the same way that pleasure, fullness of the stomach, and relief from hunger are experienced simultaneously with each bite for a person engaged in eating. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.42. Right, so the devotion, as you surrender to Krishna, then that direct experience of the Lord, of Krishna revealing himself, and your detachment from anything else other than Krishna, they happen together. Right? So that's the point. When there's devotion, then the other, you get the Lord. When that's there, you're interested in the material. So they all happen together. Right? So just like when you eat, the pleasure is there, the stomach becomes full, and the hunger goes away. Right? So that's there. Sri Krishna continued, Everything that can be achieved by fruit of activities, penance, knowledge, detachment, mystic yoga, charity, religious duties, and all other means of perfecting life, is easily achieved by my devotee through loving service unto me. Footnote 18. A person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing sacrifices, undergoing austerities, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all these, and at the end, he reaches the supreme eternal abode. Bhagavad Gita 8.28. So that faith is very important. That devotional service gives everything, then there's no interest in whatever's lower than that. Somebody said? Yes. Yeah. If somehow or other my devotee desires promotion to heaven, liberation, or residence in my abode, he easily achieves such benedictions. Because my devotee possesses saintly behavior and deep intelligence, they completely dedicate themselves to me and do not desire anything besides me. Means if they were looking for that, they get it very easily. But because of the depth of their intelligence and their saintly behavior, they don't endeavor for that. Indeed, even if I offer them liberation from birth and death, they do not accept it. Right? Because we see so many times when Krishna's interacting with the devotees, they say so many things, and Krishna will say, you know, I'll offer you, you know, these, and they say no. It is said that complete detachment is the highest stage of freedom. Therefore, one who has no personal desire and does not pursue personal rewards can achieve loving devotional service unto me. Right? So that complete detachment means detachment is what's talking about vairag. Right? But we're talking about complete detachment, which comes from bhakti. Right? Because even in detachment, there's still an attachment to that false identity. Does that make sense? That I'm a scholar, I'm a jnani, I'm very knowledgeable, I'm very detached. Right? They're attached to their detachment. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so generally most are attached to their attachments. But you can also be attached to your unattached, you know, being, what do you call it?
Detachment.
Yes, yeah, detachment. Disattachment, I was thinking. I mean, technically it works. Yeah? So the point is it still remains, only bhakti removes that completely. Right, so that's the highest stage of freedom. So bhakti is the highest stage. Yes?
It's interesting. Raghunath Das Goswami, who is the personification of renunciation in our line, he has that beautiful prayer offered to Sanatana Goswami that I was engaged in a dry renunciation, but he pulled me out by his grace and immersed me in bhakti rasa.
Mm-hmm.
It's very famous.
Yes, yes. But now, in that, just taking it a step further, I mean, not a step further means bringing in another angle. It's not that point is that of the acharyas, he's known as the acharya of which?
Prayojana.
Right? So then that, where were we? Here. Complete detachment is the highest stage of freedom. So we see he's the most renounced, you know, externally. Because he's representing that point of that prayojana. So that's the point. It supports this. That because of such absorption in Krishna, therefore there's such detachment. Like that. And it's just a matter of it's favorable for their situation, then they do. So then it's not a matter of he's more renounced than Rupa and Sanatana. It's just a matter of for his service, that's important. For theirs, it's not as much. I mean, as it is, they're so renounced. You know, it's just, say what you will, but you know, you're going to take a leaf cup of buttermilk every day instead of every other day. You know, and so therefore, you know, ah.
So now you see that all pure devotees exhibit all qualities.
Yes, all qualities. It's just a matter of what will be manifest at what time and all that. So then there's certain, you know, like that element of... I mean, you see it there, but you know, like Bhima has certain things he manifests that you expect from him. Not that heroism or that virya, and that's not there in Arjuna, but it just takes on a different quality. It's mixed with other aspects. But with Bhima, it's you know, just in its very, you know, strong, you know, form. And that's what gives that taste. So that's the whole idea, is all the different devotees at different situations are manifesting different qualities to, you know, enhance the transcendental rasa. Because that's what it's all about. Yeah. Coming up next year. Yeah, Chaitanya Charitamrita. So after the austerity of this year of technical points, then. Yeah. So now it's over ahead. Then we're going to Rasa. This is over ahead. Whatever it is, it's always over our head, you know. What's not over our head? Lunch. It has to be below your head, otherwise you can't eat it.
Sometimes when we eat too much, it also goes over.
Yeah, because then the pile of rice is still there and we're lying on the ground back. And it's not as tall as the pile of rice. So. Therefore, one who has no personal desire and does not pursue personal rewards can achieve loving devotional service unto me. Material piety and sin, which arise from the good and evil of this world, cannot exist within my unalloyed devotees, who, being freed from material hankering, maintain steady spiritual consciousness in all circumstances. Indeed, such devotees have achieved me, the Supreme Lord, when beyond anything that can be conceived by material intelligence. Right. So you see that being fixed on Krishna and therefore giving up that interest in the material world, they go together. They're simultaneous. That's the advantage of bhakti. While the others is, no, they have attachment and they have to cultivate detachment. We just cultivate absorption in Krishna, that will naturally then everything's done for Krishna.
Less work.
Less work. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. I have said, guna dosha, drishtir dosha, gunas tubhya varjita. To see good and bad is itself a bad quality. And thus, the best quality is to transcend seeing good and bad qualities. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:19:45. This best quality resides in my devotees. The gunas, the sattva, rajas, and tamas, from which arise good and bad qualities, do not exist in these devotees, because they're not discussing on these platform.
Yes.
Right? So good and bad means goodness, passion, and ignorance.
Yes.
Right? So they're seeing beyond in shuddha sattva. So what is appropriate to shuddha sattva, then that is what's correct. And what's not, that's what's not correct. But outside of that, on the material platform, they don't make the distinction, because it's all bad. Just there's bad and worse.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Gradations. Yeah, gradations. They have spiritual qualities because they have achieved the Lord, who is eternity, knowledge, and bliss, who is superior to Prakriti, Buddhehe, and who is thus without any material qualities. All my senses are beyond the material gunas. The nature of the devotee is described later with the words nirguno mad apashraya. The person who has taken shelter of me is beyond the gunas. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:25-26. Another meaning is as follows. The devotees have no qualities related to injunctions and prohibitions which give rise to concepts of good and bad. Right, so they're not relating themselves to these things. That's the meaning of also the devotee of Ekayana. It's just about devotional service. So they're not performing the duties according to the rules and regulations. They're performing it according to devotional service. Right? Does that make sense? So for us, we're generally dealing the most in the, even we're saying brahminical, in the Bhagavat and in the Pancharatric levels. So both of those are above the modes. They're both considered paravidya. And in the Vedic, it's just how much is necessary to socially hold things together. But otherwise, all the rules we're not doing because, you know, yeah, not so feasible, right? They have no good qualities by performing pious acts, right? By they perform a pious act, they don't get a pious result. And no bad qualities by performing forbidden acts, because they don't do anything forbidden. They always do things for Krishna. Shiva describes how the devotees see equally, sama chittanam. Quote, devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of Narayana. Solely engaged in the devotional service of Narayana. Never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:17-28. What to speak of seeing material faults in the perfect devotees who have attained the Lord by bhakti, upay yusham. One should not find fault even in the sadhakas who commit sins, the Lord has said. Right? So that's what we're mentioning this morning, finding a fault. Anyas chintayanto mam ye jana paryupasate tesham nitya bhiyuktanam yoga kshema vaham yaham. I carry the burden of supply and maintenance of those who desire constant association with me, and who, thinking only of me, worship only me. Bhagavad Gita 9:22. Sri Krishna concluded. Persons who seriously follow these methods of achieving me, which I have personally taught, attain freedom from illusion. And upon reaching my personal abode, they perfectly understand the absolute truth. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur concludes. Krishna summarizes the best paths. Those who follow my instruction attain results according to the yoga they choose. The followers of Nishkam Karma attain peace. The devotees attain Vaikuntha. The jnanis attain Brahman. So whatever you like, just follow Krishna's instructions. Conclusion. If one develops faith in hearing and chanting Krishna's glories, such a person should achieve perfection through the path of loving devotion to him. As long as one is not satiated by fruits of activity and has not awakened his taste for devotional service by Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnoham, one has to act according to the regular principles of the Vedic injunctions. Until one's mind is fixed in spiritual satisfaction, one should analytically study the temporary nature of all material objects, whether cosmic, earthly, or atomic, right? So then that gives the point. Till one's mind is fixed in spiritual satisfaction, right? So we've heard 10th canto. So we see what the goal is, and we see this as a higher taste. But until we're fixed in spiritual satisfaction, that's where we get our happiness. Then we analyze the material world, on the cosmic, earthly, or atomic level. Because by doing that, then we start to separate how it's not going to make us happy.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? Whenever the mind, being concentrated on the spiritual platform, is suddenly deviated from its spiritual position, one should carefully bring it under the control of the self by following the prescribed means. The supreme yoga process is that by which one carefully observes the movements and desires of the mind and gradually brings them under control. Right? So that's the topmost yoga position. Right? The lowest will be the asanas, but the highest is going to be being able to discriminate what is the movements and desires that are, what's spiritual, what's material, and then be able to always bring the mind back to the spiritual. Right? So that's how we're bhakti yogis. Right? Having awakened faith in the narrations of Krishna's glories, but still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, a devotee should remain happy and worship the Lord with great faith and conviction. It is firmly declared that the steady adherence of transcendentalists to their respective spiritual positions constitutes real piety, and that sin occurs when a transcendentalist neglects his prescribed duty. If, because of momentary inattention, a yogi accidentally commits an abominable activity, then by the very practice of yoga he should burn to ashes the sinful reaction, without at any time employing any other procedure. Everything that can be achieved by other means of perfecting life is easily achieved by devotional service. Persons who seriously follow these methods of instructions attain freedom from illusion, and upon reaching the Lord's personal abode, they perfectly understand the absolute truth. Okay, chapter 21. Lord Krishna's explanation of the Vedic path. Pratigya. The purpose of all rules concerning good and bad is detachment by restricting the tendency to enjoy. Right? So that's why good and bad is simply so that you give up the tendency to enjoy and are detached from the material enjoyment. Right? So if you're engaged in devotional service, everything's for Krishna, for his pleasure. Therefore, there's no need of that material detachment. Therefore, there's no need of material good and bad. Chapter 21 summarizes question and answers. Sri Krishna continues to answer question 1127 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Adhyaya Prakashita. In the 21st chapter, the good and bad aspects of those involved in karma are discussed, and the meaning of the scriptures in this regard is explained. Sardartha Darshani 1121.1. For those who are perfect in knowledge and devotion to the Lord, there are no materially good qualities or faults. But for a candidate endeavoring on the path, on the platform of karma to achieve cessation of material life, execution of regular and special fruit of duties is good, and the failure to execute such is evil. That which counteracts sinful reaction is also good for him. For one on the platform of knowledge, in the pure mode of goodness, and for one on the platform of devotion, the proper actions are, respectively, cultivation of knowledge and practice of devotional service, consisting of hearing, chanting, and so forth. For both, everything detrimental to the proper actions is bad. But for persons who are not candidates for transcendental advancement, or who are not purified souls, namely those who are completely inimical to spiritual life, and are devoted exclusively to fruit of work, for fulfillment of lusty desires, there are numerous considerations of purity and impurity, and auspiciousness and inauspiciousness. Right? So you can't mix the two. You can't claim one position and use another. So whatever it is, as devotees, we just use the devotional aspect. These are to be made, these auspicious and inauspicious, according in terms of one's body, the place of activity, the time, the objects utilized, the performer, the mantras chanted, and the particular activity. Right, so all these, when it says the performer, right, the one's body, one has to see those as part of, when we say time, place, and circumstance, circumstance includes the performer, the body, you know, along with that. Because otherwise we take it that it's an impersonal, it's outside of that, so I'm separate, so I can do whatever I like. No, it includes you. You're a part of time. Time, place, and circumstance includes yourself. Is that...
I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Amnaya Sutras, he defines time, place, and karma.
Time, place, and karma. That's circumstance. Yeah. Yeah, because karma means then what's your guna, you know, what activities, the qualities you have, and everything. Yeah. Yeah, very good. In actuality, oh no. Oh, you know, we did that. Oh, the mantra is chanted in the particular activity. Okay. In actuality, virtue and fault are not absolute, but are relative to one's particular platform of advancement. Right? So what's something on one platform is something else on another. Does that make sense? Like for a Brahmin to not do all the Sandhyabandhana aspects in chanting their Gayatri, that would be a fault. But if the devotees don't do, it's not a problem, because that, you know, 10 minutes they'll spend doing some other service.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remaining fixed in the type of discrimination suitable to one's level of advancement is good, and anything else is bad. This is the basic understanding of virtue and fault. Right? It's a virtue because it's good for your position. It's bad because it's not. Right, so that depends on your platform of advancement, and we can't say, well, what works for me works for everybody. Right, does that make sense? Yes, we'll try to say that. Of course. Even among objects belonging to the same category, there are different considerations of their purity or impurity in relation to performance of religious duties, worldly transactions, and the maintenance of one's life. These distinctions are described in various scriptures. Right? Same category, but it changes. You know, just like stool. There's one it's a category, but within that there's then impurity, and then there's cow dung, which is pure. Like that. So you have to see according to Shastra. Otherwise you won't know. The doctrine of Varnashram codifies precepts of bodily purity and impurity. With respect to place, purity and impurity are distinguished by such facts as the presence of black deer. Right? So place. If the black deer roam there, then that's considered a good place. They don't roam there, it's not considered a good place. Right? So that's why you see Brahmins would live in just particular areas, you know, like that. So it's, you know, it's like they were all living up in Aryavarta, and then as the Saraswati dries up, then they move down to other places. So that makes sense. Or it's not dries up, it just became not manifest. In connection with time, there are distinctions of purity and impurity, either in terms of the time itself or in terms of its specific relation with various objects. Right? The time itself may be considered auspicious or not, or it may be it's auspicious for, let's say, traveling, but not for economics, or does that make sense? Yeah. In connection with physical substances, distinction of purity and impurity are made in terms of sanctification of objects and words, and by such activities as bathing, giving charity, performing austere penances, and remembering the Supreme Lord. There are also distinctions of the purity and impurity of the performers of actions. Right? So what do they have? What purity they have or impurity in connection with that action? So that's why saying, I'm not this body, then the point is then if you're the soul, then it should be done on the platform of pure devotion, And since it's on the platform of pure devotion, Krishna already mentioned that that's not the viewpoint that they have. We're serving the Krishna, not I'm not the body. You understand? So it doesn't work. If we're going to say, you know, about we're going to bring up this point of the body, then you have to see what the body is, and it has to function accordingly. Right? Does that make sense? Because we're not the body, but still, if we're not, but the body still is under Krishna's laws. It still functions like that. So Krishna makes the rules, not us. It's not by saying we're not this body. Now we don't. We just, you know, all rules are thrown to the wind. Right? So. When one's knowledge of mantras is received from the lips of the bona fide spiritual master, one's mantra is considered pure, and one's work is purified by offering under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? So one's mantra is pure by receiving it from the proper, and you maintain it, that you chant it as a, you know, what is the prescribed method. Then it remains that purity. Right? And one's work is purified by offering it under the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If the six factors of place, time, and so forth are purified, then there is dharma or virtue. But otherwise, there is adharma or fault. Right? So we'll try to define these according to our definitions rather than scripture. So then there'll always be a fault. So it'll be adharma. So we have to. That's why we must use scripture. Otherwise, we don't know. We can say that we're, you know, we're not from this background. These don't belong to us. But then the fault comes is then we're identifying ourselves outside of the Vedic, authority. So then that means is then it's all speculative. It's all sense gratification. It's all sinful. Right? Because it's nothing to do with Krishna. So why would we want to say that that's a better situation? Right? So it's always that it's connection to Krishna. That's the whole point. So the scripture is coming from Krishna. You don't get a whole lot more connected than that. Right? Then that's why they're followed. That's the point. Not because of rules and regulations, but because they come from Krishna.
So, yeah. So what are these six factors?
That we mentioned eventually before.
With respect to tokenness.
But we have them. Yeah, okay. Bodily, purity, place, time. What do you call it? Physical substances. Okay, charity, austerity. Oh no, that's all part of that. Actions, mantras, and work. Right? It means he gave all of them in one place before that, but so this is all. So when they say time, place, and circumstance, then you can add in these other three just to just so that make sure that they understand all the factors. Right? But you're only considering three. What about these others? All right. So the performer of action, the mantra. And the
what?
And the work. Like that. Ultimately, there is no substantial basis. Oh, didn't we just do that? Didn't it say that before? Or it's, did we read this?
No, we didn't.
No, but this point we
said the same point over and over again.
Okay, but I thought it was just the wording. Ultimately, there is no substantial basis in distinctions of virtue and fault, because they transform according to place, time, beneficiary, and so on. It's just like, let's say, someone in the family does something they shouldn't have to, and it's something that they're habitual at doing. Do we method over and over again? Of course, you have to. That's just the method. Right? Krishna does it, that's why we do it. Right? Yes, yes. So that's the thing. It's here, Krishna Uddhava banging a hole in our head to make sure that it fills up with Krishna prema rather than other, you know, nonsense. Right? Or maybe the hole allows all the other stuff to come out, and then you can put Krishna bhakti in.
Hmm?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Ultimately, there's no substantial basis in distinctions of virtue and fault. Right? There's no ultimate because it's according to these different things. Because they transform according to place, time, beneficiary, and so on. In regard to the execution of prescribed duties. So that's the thing. Oh, there's no ultimate. But the point is it mentions the principle there, but then there's the context in which it's applied. So that you have these six, and they're defined, that's an eternal principle. It always applies. Then, application of that in bhakti, that always applies. But it being applied in detail in the secondary, you know, to karma or jnana or bhakti, that'll change. You understand? So one has to understand that the Veda has that ability to have an absolute statement that can be applied individually. That's the uniqueness of the Vedic system. Other systems don't have that. Other systems, here's the rule, everyone follows it, or it's a problem, so therefore no one has to follow the rule. Right? And then when the problem comes up, then they'll make their own rules. Like the Vedic rule says what to do, that doesn't work, so then they'll... Does that make sense? Yeah. In regard to the execution of prescribed duties for sense gratification, the actual intent of all the scriptures is the subduing of materialistic propensities. Such is the actual principle of religion that destroys sorrow, confusion, and fear and bestows all good fortune. So we want all good fortune, but we want all sense gratification. That the two don't get along that well. You know, the example is given of... it's like wanting all auspiciousness wherever you go, but wherever you go, you carry a black cat with you. You know, sitting on your lap. At any time, it could jump off and, you know, create it. Yeah, so that's the... Work performed for sense gratification is not actually beneficial. The descriptions of such fruit of benefits offered in various phala shrutis are actually meant to help one gradually cultivate a taste for the highest benefit, right? So at least they get you to follow it, because you're following authority, the karma will produce knowledge and detachment. So it's moving you forward. That's why we say karma, jnana, and bhakti, these are the only ones that are progressive. Below that, they're not progressive. They may be trying to say these modern political and all these philosophical things, but they're not actually progressive because they don't move you forward. They don't produce knowledge and detachment. But persons of inferior intelligence take the flowery benedictory verses of the scriptures to be the actual purport of the Vedas, means the actual goal. This opinion, however, is never held by those in factual knowledge of the truth of the Vedas. Persons whose minds are agitated by the flowery words of the Vedas have no attraction for hearing topics about Lord Hari. It should be understood that there is no inner purport to the Vedas apart from the original personality of Godhead. The Vedas focus exclusively on the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, whereas the material world is simply the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord. It is by refuting material existence that one gains disassociation from matter. So that's why that refuting the existence, that analysis is there. So when one's nicely situated and satisfied in devotional service, you don't need to do that. Because you're already absorbed in Krishna. Right? But if we're distracted from Krishna by sense gratification and speculation, that's where the analyzation comes in, that there is no benefit from this. Right? And we do that in connection to Krishna, because if we don't do it connected to Krishna, it may advance us on that path of jnana, but it won't give us that attraction to Krishna. So we do this in connection with Krishna. And so because of that, then we get situated in devotional service, right? So that's what we see this 11th canto is doing. It's showing us how to analyze, how to separate ourselves from the mundane, right? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Premanandini.